This is CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com, just after 7 o'clock Wednesday morning. And if you are used to hearing Gord Laws at this time, I'm sorry, he's not here today. Gord is busy. He's got something else on, but he's assured us he will be back next week. Don't forget, tomorrow, the last episode of The Burning Platform featuring Canthan Pillay, and then we're going to rejig that current affairs feature so that you get the very best. Can't be partisan, obviously. So we're going to give Canthan one last hurrah, and then we'll change the way that we do The Burning Platform.
Right, just speaking of The Burning Platform, whatever happened to Justice Malala after he went to Venice Beach to become a muscle man?
He grew a beard.
Yes.
And he did come to South Africa a few weeks ago, but he was literally in and out.
Is he buff?
Due to
all that time on Venice Beach, is he buff?
I don't know about that, Ben. Yeah. But he is coming back into the country in April, so hopefully he'll be able to pop in.
For elections?
Yeah, I think he's still very much involved. He's been here, he's given a couple of talks, but obviously we got used to hearing from Justice every week on The Burning Platform, which is on Thursdays. It's brought to you by Nando's, 7 o'clock in the morning. And whenever you want to listen on podcasts, people like it, and we're going to keep that fresh and new and interesting for you. Mm-hmm. By the way, Blind History. We did Ramesses the Second yesterday, if you missed out on that.
Episode 7.
Yes, you want to find out all about the great pharaoh of ancient Egypt. He's the one that you need to know about. You can go and listen on cliffcentral.com. And I was saying to someone last night that if you are ever looking for any of these podcasts, we don't mind if you use our app or the podcast app on Apple or any of the others, because we're on all of them. Go and subscribe today. Get your favorite podcasts. If you haven't listened to Understanding Cancer yet, that's another podcast series that we've got. Advances in cancer prevention and treatment mean more people are surviving this disease every single day. But going from life as a cancer patient to a survivor can be pretty challenging. We don't expect you to do that on your own. But today you can find out more about the support that is key to the transition phase to a new normal and a bright future. And remember, all 10 episodes are available for you to binge on at cliffcentral.com, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Understanding Cancer is brought to you by Discovery. Go and take a listen to it. It might just help you.
Mm.
So I got a message from Claudio, who said, please ask Gareth to listen and share his opinion on an attached video about Eskom and what is possibly playing out behind the scenes. Now, I haven't seen this yet, so let's take a listen together, and then we can figure out what we make of it.
It's 8 minutes long.
Yeah, I'm not going to listen to the whole thing.
I have something for you today that once you understand and grasp the severity of what it implies.
All right, I don't really
I think I've seen that video. It's about the fact that Eskom didn't take a single cent from taxpayers' money until 2008 or so.
And then it's probably very good. What's wrong?
Can we look at the player right now?
007.
Okay.
Took 7 seconds for me to stop that. Look, there are so many theories around how Eskom has failed. The unmitigated disaster that is Eskom proves once and for all that the very last people you should ask to handle something which is essential is a bunch of people who won a popularity contest in politics. Full stop. There's no more to discuss. They're crooked, corrupt, and outrageously ill-equipped for public office, these people who were put in charge of Eskom. And I'm very sad to say that the blood that is on the floor and on the hands of the perpetrators here, you can follow the tracks, and they all lead to Luthuli House. The ANC is completely responsible for this Eskom fiasco. Their policies, their inability to appoint the right people for the right job, cater deployment, and their seeming inability to turn away from thieving. These are the things that have made Eskom the disaster that it is. It is not possible to jig the system more in favor of any single business than Eskom. Eskom had all the things it needed to be a massive success. In any other free market system, or any other system for that matter, you had a monopoly that had a product that people absolutely needed. There was no doubt that everyone and anyone needed power, right? You can tell when load shedding happens, people need power. You can tell that their ability to keep raising the price of this commodity, this essential commodity, was something that was hardly ever even debated. People just paid more every time for less. Then they went out and said, please use less of our product. An incredible thing. No company says to you, please buy less of our product. Eskom did. And they ran it into the ground through sheer incompetence and ignorance. And I don't need to watch this video now, Claudio, but I promise you I will. I don't want to bore everybody else with it, especially if it's 8 minutes long. But I'll watch it. And if there's new stuff and there's interesting stuff that I should be paying attention to, I promise you I will take it on board and maybe we can have a chat about it.
But so those 7 seconds did make an impact
on off.
You.
They put me off. Okay. Lots of people talking about yesterday with Pig Spotter and Howard Dembowski. You know, we launched the first of four
smart driving with
smart
Pig
driving. Pig Spotter and King Price Insurance are involved there as well. Try to get you the info that you need about what this auto bill is going to mean.
That was a fascinating discussion.
Sure.
And frightening at the same time.
Scary stuff. I'll tell you what, if you didn't hear it yesterday, listen to it today. It's available as a podcast. And you can hear what Howard Dembowski, who really is the most educated guy when it comes to what the rules of the road are, who the Metro Police are and aren't allowed to pull over and lock up and fine and, you know, what the rules are around what happens if you have a fine, what's going on with e-tolls. This guy's on top of it. And he says this morning, the points demerit system is not in play yet, but there is no harm in getting into what it will mean for us. And he addresses some of those in the podcast too. So go and take a look at that and a whole lot more. All right, what else is going on? What do you want to talk about this
Gareth,
morning?
How are things at home? How's your relationship? Because it seems your girlfriend is going through a lot right now. Cardi B.
Oh,
Jesus,
I thought for a minute.
Things okay?
What? It's really going badly if I don't even know who she is. What's happening with Cardi B? What's the problem?
Shame. Poor Cardi B. We all know we live in these times where anything you've remotely done, even if it was 8 years, 3 months, and 7 days ago, will somehow pop up.
Whoa. Let me preface this by saying Cardi already admitted she was once a stripper.
Mm-hmm.
She's admitted that she was very poor once.
Mm-hmm.
She had to do what she had to do to make a buck.
Oh, and she did things
like
that she had to do to make a buck.
So what's come up? How can this woman, if she's admitted all of this already, how can she possibly be embarrassed by any other revelation?
What is now coming back to bite her in the behind is a video that has surfaced back from her stripper days,
mm-hmm.
when she admitted to drugging and robbing men while she was a stripper.
Wow.
In this clip, these are her words. She says, I had to go strip. I had to go, oh, yeah, you want to F me? And then these guys would say, yeah. And then she would coerce them back to a hotel room. That's when she'd drug them and rob them and leave them. That's how she made her money, more than being a stripper. So from this video now circulating...
That's not good, huh?
Oof, no.
That's really not good.
From the video circulating, the hashtag Surviving Cardi B has started in reference to the whole R. Kelly documentary, hashtag Surviving R. Kelly. And Cardi B has now just simply stepped up to the plate and owned all of this. And this is her official statement. She says that a lot of rappers glorify murder, violence, drugs, or robbing and crimes they feel like they had to do to survive. I never glorified the things I brought up in that live video. I never even put those things in my music because I'm not proud of it and feel responsibility not to glorify it. So she owns it. She doesn't deny it. She's not saying that she's proud of it, but she's saying, you know what? I had to do what I had to do back then, and I
apart from
drug
the course,
people.
Though. No, but that's... Look, if you have a stripper or anyone in the sex industry looking to kind of coerce you back to their place, it's not going to be when a man loves a woman. Your kidney might go out. You might lose it more than your wallet. That's what you're going to... It's going to happen. And what's saying is right.
So what do we make of this? I mean, what's the right way for her to respond to this? Because clearly it is wrong to drug people and to coerce them into things that they don't want to do. That's what we call sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. And I mean, when you're at a strip club, you're in a certain frame of mind. And I'm not going to stand up for guys who go to a strip club hoping for this stuff to happen.
Well, no one hopes to, you know, be robbed.
No one wants to be robbed. No one wants to be drugged.
Probably hoping to go back to a hotel room.
They're hoping someone like Cardi B will take them home. But it's wrong to drug people and to rob them. That's wrong in every sense of the word. And one of the reasons we find the whole R. Kelly or Michael Jackson or Bill Cosby situation so upsetting is that these things happen without your
consent,
volition and consent. Because when you're under the influence of drugs or alcohol, you can't make the right decision. And sometimes you aren't responsible for what those decisions are. So what do we make of this? I mean, sure, Cardi B needed to make a living, but to do that, maybe that's what all strippers do. Who knows? Maybe this is what happens. We don't know, because most of these stories, what man's going to get out there after something goes wrong in a strip club and admit that he was in a strip club and got robbed and doesn't remember 2 or 3 hours of his life? What man is going to admit that? And who's he going to admit it to? His wife? I don't think so.
Yeah, it's not about wanting to see people suffer and people's careers being ruined. Yep. But if we're talking about the need for objectivity in scenarios, as we were referencing slightly in the first hour, then we need to have a line, you know, where this is what it is, and across the line, this is what it is as well. I have to admit, I think what will save Cardi in this, if we're being very blunt and honest, are our innate biases. She doesn't look like a predator. We like her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's fun and cool and hip. She's not creepy looking, drives a white van with no windows and
did
says,
R. Kelly
hey,
drive a white van see? With no windows?
I'm just saying, you know.
Wow.
So, yeah, if we're going to take one down, then should we take?
I mean, what's the difference? Down? What's the difference here between Cardi B and Harvey Weinstein?
Profile.
Well, if you compare Cardi to Bill, literally the only difference is that Cardi just robbed them of things. Other than that, Bill also met his victims in a good time arena sometimes.
Yeah,
bar the one
Bill didn't like steal their jewelry.
Yeah, but afterwards. Still drugged them.
Yeah, but he took something which was not material, if you know what
I
mean.
Well, I guess the thing is here, it's a theft versus a sexual assault case. It's just pure theft.
Okay.
The fact that it's got a sexual connotation to it is ultimately theft.
I don't know. I'm so glad I'm not I'm not someone who hero worships, because this would make my life very difficult. See, if I was the kind of person who hero worshipped, if I thought some humans were just godlike, if I thought Cardi B was amazing just because of her talent and the different rules applied to her, imagine how miserable I'd be. And imagine if I was a Michael Jackson fan to the extent that I couldn't believe he would be guilty of the things that clearly he was. Imagine how that would make my life difficult. But fortunately for me, I don't hero worship any of these people. So when horrible
things... Well, except your girlfriend, you know.
Well, Cardi B, you know, I can only fantasize about her being my girlfriend, but the reality is, like, she's not. And I don't hero worship her, and she says a lot of stupid stuff. She's just pure entertainment. What we've got to stop doing as people who appreciate talent is we've got to stop imagining that just because someone is a good dancer or singer or actor or painter or writer or whatever, that they're also a good person, because they don't go together. And similarly, someone can be an awful person but a very good politician or engineer or doctor or scientist. Someone can be a fantastic person and be a terrible politician, doctor, scientist, or engineer. You know, your mom. Think about your mom. Would she be the best president? I don't think so. Even though she's your mom. You probably love your mom. Would she make a terrific engineer without any qualifications? I don't know. Maybe your mom is a great engineer.
No, not mine. No.
But maybe she is. Look, they don't have to go together. They might, but they don't have to. And the reason that some of us are able to keep an arm's length away from the people who we look up to. I mean, Sia, you would be devastated if it turned out Oprah Winfrey was a child molester.
Oh, is she?
You know...
Well, she was molested as a child. But imagine how you'd feel if it turned out. Because you kind of hero worship Oprah.
Mm-hmm. But...
If I found out that Oprah was a child molester, I would not really change my opinion on, you know, her person. I don't know her personally, but I respect her in the media world.
Right.
So it wouldn't bother me as much as it would bother you.
I have to admit, it would bother me. Sure. And even just, as much as I love her, I do know that, for example, she knew about Harvey. I suspect she knew certain things. But
that doesn't make her the worst person.
It doesn't make her the
I think a lot of people in Hollywood knew about Harvey and did nothing.
You know, people are complex. We all have layers. We all have different things going on.
And I just want to state that we have no evidence that Oprah's a bad person. But let's just go with, you know, Harvey Weinstein, all of these people. I'm going to watch Harvey Weinstein's movies. They were great movies. I have no problem with them. I'm going to listen to Michael's music. I'm going to listen to R. Kelly's music. I thought a lot of those songs were iconic.
Well, as long as you're not singing the words out loud and then at traffic lights going, "I love R. Kelly," that would just be a bit silly.
I don't think I've ever done that, Ben. And
all right,
for anyone
with the remix to ignition.
No, but he doesn't roll down his window and scream, "I love R. Kelly." He's just going, "Doot doot."
We hope not. Yeah, we
hope not. Running my head through my fro.
Yeah,
we hope not.
It's not that I won't listen to R. Kelly music now. I can gladly listen to I Believe I Can Fly and Storm Is Over. But, you know, when you get to songs from the album Black Panties.
Yeah, okay.
And Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, I don't like those so much. Yeah, those are not my favorite. Okay, here's a real story that we should be concerned about. I hate to go to serious things because this is kind of frivolous and stupid. But this story is serious. So apparently, xenophobic attacks have flared up in KZN in Durban. They started on Monday. A mob of protesters burst into the homes of foreign nationals, moving door to door, seizing belongings. Basically criminal behavior.
Oh no.
You know, it's amazing to me how foreign nationals get targeted and their businesses get looted, which is just criminal. It's also xenophobic, but it's just criminal. And the reason that these criminals who are stealing stuff get away with it so often is because these foreign nationals don't have anyone to go to protect them. They don't, maybe they're illegal immigrants, so they don't have the right to approach our normal law enforcement, because our law enforcement will say, "Oh, you don't have a passport, or you don't have the right documents to be here." To me, a crime is a crime, whether it's committed against someone who has the right papers or not. If you steal Sia's things and Sia happens to be from Malawi and doesn't have papers, that doesn't mean that you didn't steal Sia's things, right? It would be obvious to me that these people who've done this stuff should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. It's amazing how when a riot breaks out somewhere, there are a group of people who will use that riot as an excuse to steal stuff that isn't theirs. Those people are worse than any of the rioters. And in the case where you victimize a group of foreign nationals, seems to me that that's the most horrible kind of crime, because you're going after the weak people. You're going after the people who have no recourse in law. So they stole beds, TV sets, pots and baskets. They targeted foreign operated shops. The violence left several people injured and at least two people dead. And while police patrols have brought calm to the area, foreign nationals are still afraid to venture outside. Can you imagine how horrible that is? So they, in the Daily Maverick today, talk about Temba Sibanda, who's holed up in his home in Benwood Park in Durban, too afraid to go outside to use the bathroom, let alone go to work.
Imagine.
The Zimbabwean national, who's been in the country for 4 years, escaped falling victim rather to a marauding mob in the early hours of Monday this week by hiding away. More than 24 hours later, he still would not set foot outside, fearful of being caught and injured by the mob. They came and knocked on my door. I didn't answer. I can't even go out to pee. I'm using a bucket, he says, speaking softly over the phone, careful not to make any detectable noise, fearing it may attract the mob. He says the 100-strong mob entered their rooms, chased people out, grabbed their goods. At about 6 a.m. on Monday, they moved to the shops, which were about to open. I heard gunshots and went out to look. I saw a Somali guy shooting with a gun upwards to scare the Zulu men, he said. So this is just the worst kind of thing, and it shows how all of the talk that we hear from politicians is exactly that. It's just talk. You know, we're part of Africa. We've got a pan-African view. I saw the vice chancellor of Tux University saying his dream is to expand education in a pan-African sense all over the world. These are all great and noble ideals, but when it comes to what we're actually doing about them, it seems that we have no intention at all of doing what we say or saying what we do.
And what our leadership, I think, fails to understand is these are the moments where we want to see you lead and do something. It's not cutting a ribbon somewhere. It is not standing and posing and waving with a visitor to the country.
Or being like the Zulu king, who is meant to be a factor of unification and of tradition and of good values.
We don't want to see you just at the reed dance. This is actually where we want to see you.
What we'd like the Zulu king to do is to try not to say xenophobic things, which he's done over the course of the last 5 years. And that has not helped. And the fact that this is happening in KwaZulu-Natal is probably not coincidence. Because when you've got people who have authority and they don't use that authority to spread good and instead use it to spread patent evil, that's a bad thing.
But you remember Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, right? She was African chair, whatever.
Yes, the AU chair. Yeah.
Okay, so she's drawing a fat salary doing what at the moment?
Well, we don't know. Absolutely,
fuck all. Okay. What she's doing, yeah. So now, why can't she champion something which she talks about?
She's not there. She's there
communities
to earn,
and integration.
She's there to earn free money. She was running for president against Cyril. So Cyril realized he had to keep his enemies close. So he brought her in. She's minister in the presidency. God alone knows what she's done in 2 years. 0.0 has been achieved by this person.
If she were to champion hashtag fight xenophobia, there's a thing. Like people strive for purpose in life, right? This is what gets us through. This is what gets us out of bed in the morning.
Well, people who have purpose.
Yeah. Okay. So we all know politicians' purpose is, as you say, get free money. But what a great chance for her to make a difference. Like, this is her thing. Like, she was the chair of the African, I don't even know what it is because it's done nothing.
Is it the AU? The African Union.
Let's go with that.
Yeah.
So this is her. She could finally actually do something about it. How cool is that? Like, how cool to have a purpose?
Yeah.
Because this stuff always flares up. So she could do that.
Yeah, well, you would hope. You know, you would think. That's what we would like to know. But just quickly, before we wrap up and go to Daniel Barron, does anyone want to know what's happening with Brexit?
I still don't know really what's going on. I still don't know what Theresa May does.
Another day, another update.
All right, well, here's a great Jonathan Pye, who I think is probably one of the most sensible people. He gets very cross. But if you are feeling frustrated by Brexit, just imagine how the Brits are feeling at the moment. Here's what he had to say. Take a listen. This is Jonathan Pye, obviously a commentator. He gets very angry when the cameras are turned off. He tells you the real story. And if you don't understand parody, this is not for you.
Here in Westminster, I'm here all day with all the Brexit latest. But before that, the sport and the weather. Jesus Christ, it's like an episode of Don't Tell the Bride. It's some complete fucking bellend running around 7 days before the big day, pissing his pants, not a fucking clue what he's doing, hasn't organised the car, the catering, the flowers. I thought I could come in on a jet ski. No. Are you sure about the jet ski? No. What about an aquatic personal watercraft? That's a fucking jet ski, Teresa. No one wants the jet ski. Shut up about the fucking jet ski. She's got one thing right, though. The UK has slid into a crisis, slowly and surely over 10 painful years. And who got us here? This lot. This gaggle of obdurate, arrogant, stubborn, unrepentant, heartless bunch of self-serving arseholes who have spent the last 3 years trying to keep their useless, irrelevant political parties together while sleepwalking the country into a food blender. Every MP in that building should bow their head in shame. You know, I had more respect for this useless bunch of wankers during the expenses scandal. You know, at least that particular omni-fuck suggested a modicum of ingenuity, a bit of fucking brain. At least someone in the country was getting something out of it, even if it was just a free fucking duck house. What a fucking shit fight. Yeah, exactly. How did this happen? Seriously? Do you mean how did we end up with Brexit? That's like asking why is the moon there? Okay. All right, simple answer, they broke the contract. Okay, we are all obsessed in this country with your average Leave voter. That.
All right, now listen to this, because this actually does explain Brexit a little better than anyone else. And if you make your way through his fake anger and all the rest of it, this is actually the best explanation I've heard of what happened to result in Brexit. He's talking about the average Leave voter. Yeah.
Stereotype of an over 50 southern gammon-faced male reader who wants to turn the UK into a neoliberal deregulated paradise. But your average Leave voter explains nothing, because they were always going to vote Leave no matter what. It's your marginal Leave voter that explains everything. 26% of UKIP voters in the 2015 election voted as a protest against the three main parties. You translate that sentiment to the referendum and boom! These are the people that saw their prospects go down the shitter, who lost their job stability, who had to move house because of the bedroom tax, who suddenly saw no prospect of their kids going to university, that have their disability benefits denied by some corporate box-ticking twat. We are in this mess because they broke the contract between a citizen and his government. A government's basic job is to extort money from the working people in the form of taxes. I'll have some of that, thank you very much, and we're fine with that, so long as the government redistributes that money wisely and fairly. Austerity broke the contract. When you make a conscious choice not to invest in education and at the same time massively rack up the private cost of further education, you break the contract. When you outsource the distribution of benefits to private companies whose main motivation is profit, you break the contract. When the private sector decides who deserves help and who doesn't, the government is essentially saying it can't do its job. It's given up on delivering. Housing? Fuck me. The entire UK economy is basically a massive laundry for Russian dirty money via the property market, which inflates prices so that most people can barely afford rent.
All right, and he carries on, but I give you a little bit of a taste of what Jonathan Pye had to say about Brexit. And honestly, if you want to understand part of the problem here that the British MPs don't even understand, you need to listen to what he's saying there, because it is clear as daylight, right?
It's such an interesting topic. It really is.
I mean, we're all sitting here going, what is this? What is the problem? Why can't this just... We haven't moved past it in 4 years. We still don't know what's going on there. And this guy explains it very simply. They've broken the contract. There's always an understanding between taxpayers and the government. And in some ways, our own government has broken our contract. And people don't understand why people in this country are pissed off and why everything is broken. It's because that contract's been broken, first of all. And once that contract's broken, it's very difficult to fix it again.
Sure.
All right. We got to talk to Daniel Barron. I love this guy. He's a talented musician. We've had him in here a couple of times. He was actually at cliffcentral.com just a couple of weeks ago. He's a South African chart favorite. He's someone who's no stranger to all of us. And as much as he has to celebrate in his life at the moment, he has a case on against no less than David Guetta. He's claiming that David Guetta plagiarized a melody from his song Lightheaded, his 2018 collaboration with Sia. So... we're going to find out what that's all about. Children of the Sun is Daniel's song. He says David stole it and turned it into Lightheaded. How do you like that, Ben? Controversial?
Unscrupulous, Gareth.
Yeah, unscrupulous. Hey,
that's what I'm going to say,
Daniel Barron. How the hell are you, dude?
Fine, thanks. And you, Gareth?
Son of a bitch, David Guetta, huh? What's going on here? People stealing your music. What is this? What's happened?
A little bit crazy, yeah. Last year, September, he released his new album, titled Seven.
Yes.
And it went straight onto the Billboard charts and whatnot. And then I heard it in my car. I was listening to it and listening
through the album. And you went, oh, shit, that sounds familiar.
Yeah. Actually, it was one of the artists I was producing at the time sent me a message and said, quickly tune into this track. And I'd listened to a bit of the album before, but I hadn't listened to the whole thing. I went to the song Lightheaded, and I'm a fan of Guetta. I love his stuff. I've been listening to his stuff since his first big hit with Kelly Rowland back in, like, when I was in matric.
Yeah, I remember him. Yeah, it's been around a long time, and he's a very successful DJ. He's made millions. He's done very well. So let's just play the two songs. So you heard this song of his, and then and I'm going to play your song first and let people hear that, because that was the one that you claim came first, and then we'll talk a little bit about how this whole thing is unraveled. So here it is, all right? So this is now David Guetta. And then in this clip, someone has taken Daniel's voice and put it over the David Guetta. Listen. There's very little dispute. The melody. Yeah, I mean,
so pretty much. It can be released in one CD. Like, as different
this
edits.
This is like Cardi B in the strip club, knocking someone out with drugs and stealing their stuff while they're asleep.
Wow, really? That's a strong comparison. But
so, where would he have heard it?
So we, So what I did was I put together a bit of a team of obviously attorneys and. Mm-hmm. Top music entertainment lawyers, and we had to do a bit of looking into where he could have heard it, obviously. So he was in Guetta was here on two occasions. One of the occasions was 2017 Ultra, and he was
Ultra Boot. Happened,
and he was obviously played at the festival, and that was the same time that Children of the Sun was a big hit in South Africa. So Children of the Sun was, literally it was getting played every day on radio, so he could have heard it on the radio. Mm-hmm. Then we also found that Children of the Sun was played at Ultra by certain DJs. I mean, it was circulating through these festivals. Right. So, they were playing my music.
So he might have been backstage getting ready and someone else was playing it.
Could have been.
Nice melody.
Could have been. But then also it actually opens up to more possibility, the fact that there's more writers on that song. There's other guys behind the scenes, ghost producers, other writers that.
So he might not have come up with this himself. Someone else might have said to him, "Hey, here's a little sample. Exactly. I want you to use this," and they would have said, "Oh, I wrote it." Exactly. They might have stolen it from you.
Exactly.
So it might not be David Guetta himself going, "Oh, let's steal this guy's song."
It could have been behind the scenes. Right. But then also Children of the Sun received airplay in his territories as well, in Europe. We've got reports, obviously, that, the streaming reports of the fact that, Children of the Sun did pretty well on streaming and in radio play as well over there.
All right, so what do the lawyers say? What do you think your chances are here? And have you heard anything from him? Because there must have been communication already.
Yes, so basically we sent an initial letter of demand / just alerting him of this, of the infringement, of the possible, of the alleged infringement or plagiarism. What I also did is I went to a musicologist, a professor in music, that did a technical sort of a comparison between the two tracks, and that was very interesting for me to see it actually written out in notation, music notes, actually comparing the exact melodies with basically identical. So we sent that to them as well, just to for a visual, just a more of a an actual a technical musical
representation.
Sure. and then basically just I always say this, like I've been saying this since I've heard it, I'm not angry, I'm not wanting to fight, you're not pissed off with David Guetta.
This is your melody and you suddenly heard someone else's.
Exactly. So we have not heard back from him yet, and then obviously it got into the news. I wanted to do it properly and not release it publicly and literally go and amicably try and resolve it before it got into the news, because I thought maybe he wouldn't want it to be in the news in that sort of perspective. But then we didn't hear from him, and now it's literally international news. Just this morning, it's literally DJ Mag did a post up about it. There's a lot of EDM media that's now posting up about it and stuff. So it's probably gained his attention. We
can't believe he hasn't even said anything yet.
In the next 2 weeks, we're going to have to take it further. We're going to give him a little bit more time now that it is in the news. Sure. Give his team some time. We have had proof that it has been definitely sent to him and his team. Still nothing. So,
a great song, by the way.
In light of all of this
happening. Nice song. Yeah, we thanks, like the song. Very nice. All right, so let's do our own snap judgment here. Ben, your thoughts, and Sia, your thoughts first of all.
I think he's Robin Thicked it. I really do.
Robin Thicked it, huh?
Yeah.
Robin Thicked Marvin Gaye'd it.
Yeah.
Mm.
All right, so Ben definitely on Daniel's side here. And how about you, Sia?
Did David Guetta steal a bit of Daniel's song? Does Dolly Parton sleep on her back?
Wow. That's obvious, huh?
Does Oprah sweat in front of a bucket of fried chicken?
That last one was quite dark, Sia.
All right, well,
I'm just being honest
thanks,
here.
Yeah.
Now, Daniel, what does it mean when you say you're going to take it further in 2 weeks?
So we'd have to, when I say we, it's my team, the guys, Stephen Hollis from Adams and Adams Attorney, he's leading the case, and Nick Matsoukas, who is one of the top South African music advocates. Anyway, we would basically have to file a lawsuit within one of his territories, which is many. He's got residences all over the world, obviously. So it would be either France, Miami, Ibiza. So we'd just have to see where possible and
all right.
And just, yeah, basically, yeah.
And what's the outcome that you'd be happy with?
All I want is to be credited
millions
as
millions and millions and millions.
I mean, a songwriting credit at this point.
Well, a songwriting credit would entitle me to royalties for the song. And sure. And that's all I want. It would be cool to be, you know, acknowledged for my melody on his song as a co-writer.
And it's a professional courtesy as well on top of that. So you're not just saying, like, I want money. It's like you've actually contributed to create something.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the important thing.
Yeah. 100%.
You know, I mean, it's so interesting because the music business is very complicated. And I was saying earlier when we were talking about the fact that you were coming in, so there are only 8 keys on the keyboard and there are only sharps and flats and that's all you got to play with. And a lot of stuff sounds similar but isn't the same. In this case, I think you could say very clearly that it's melody is the same melody. But do you think, like, there's less and less original stuff because all the good songs have been written?
There is obviously that, you know, part of my mind has thought that, and you know, but as a songwriter, when I sit down at the piano and I'm inspired, I seem to just come up with something new, and I have I have a decent music knowledge, and I've heard a large amount of songs,
and all of those things are influences, and somewhere in your head. You know, there's always this explanation, and I think a lot of musicians worry about it. Like, they suddenly have a stroke of genius, and there's this amazing melody that pops out onto the keyboard or onto the guitar or whatever, and they go, oh, that's a flash of inspiration.
Correct.
And then they discover somehow later on, well, no, it's actually something that was in the back of their minds that they'd heard before that kind of played the biggest influence in how that came about. Obviously, there are still absolute you know, ironclad originals that just drop out of the sky and are pure inspiration. But does it worry musicians, like I would imagine it would, that you hear something 5 years ago and then it sticks in your head and one day it just comes out as a version of something?
It could very well be, but as you know, It's happened before where I'll think of something and then an alarm goes off in my head because as a writer, there's a clear difference in the feeling I get when I think of something that I know is original, and then I think of something that I'm thinking, no, I've heard this before, and then our alarm will go off and I'll be okay. No, can't use that kind of thing.
Right.
So this is, you know, it's such an incredible thing, songwriting, because, you know, obviously I don't just write music for myself as well. I write for many other artists, a lot of upcoming musicians as well. I do a lot of production and stuff. So it's, I don't think music will run out. I don't think melodies will run out. I think there's possibly crisscrossing happening here and there, and like lately there's been one or two big cases, and if you do listen, there are more than one similarities, whether it's a in the beat mixed with the chords, mixed with a slight melodic similarity, or a production sound that sounds very different. It's similar, but in this case with this song, my case is that you've got the melody that's identical. Underneath the melody,
you can hum it now.
That's it. Yeah, exactly, exactly. So it's that's identical.
That clear.
It's in the same key as well.
Sure.
And it's got the same chord structures running through it, as well as the same, this exactly the same, if you want to get technical, the exactly the same notational values of those melodic parts that have been played.
It's, the music, the written music looks the same.
Exactly.
So, all right, Children of the Sun's been one of your biggest hits so far, right?
Yes.
And another big hit that occurred over the weekend, you got engaged.
Mazel tov.
So forget about the song for a minute. Yeah, so tell us, you and Juanita DePonte, you got engaged over the weekend.
Yes, yes.
How did you guys meet? How long have you been dating?
So we met last year around October, actually. Yes. So we met actually in Durban. She's from Durban. Okay. And
nobody's perfect.
Great people come from Durban. Yeah, Daniel, let me just tell you that.
She's perfect. She's perfect.
All right.
So pretty much, yeah, we met and we just couldn't stop talking. We just became like best friends off the bat, and it was amazing.
For a year you've been dating, what made you decide to pop the question eventually?
So it was actually less than a year. It's like only 6 months.
Oh,
yeah. So exciting. When you know, I started planning the whole proposal earlier this year.
Uh-huh.
And so what I did was I
heard David Guetta tried to steal your vows and your engagement proposal idea as well. Huh?
I don't know. Maybe.
All right. So you've got the same jeweler to get the same ring.
So definitely. What did you plan?
So I obviously started looking at rings and diamonds and stuff, mm-hmm. and at the same time. But then basically what I did is one of my favorite places in South Africa is a little town called Langebaan. It's on the west coast.
Right, very pretty.
And it's really a paradise lagoon that is kind of like nestled in the.
See, it gets very emotional.
Yeah.
So I
rented a yacht, which is in the. It's kind of just moored there in the lagoon, and we just went for this. I just said, well, she still lives in Durban, so I just said, I've booked flights. We both meeting in Cape Town. We both flew there. And
took a drive up the coast. She had no suspicions?
No suspicions, no idea. And I just said, look, I've got a little surprise for you. I've booked at a really cool place.
Okay.
And so that was her initial surprise. We got to the yacht, and the yacht was incredible. We just chilled there for the first day. And then I had planned to basically, we took a little dinghy boat to the shore, and I booked a photographer to hide in the bushes.
Sia, calm down. So what happens?
And so now we're lying on the beach, and now the moment's getting closer. So I keep looking to the side, like just checking what the photographer's doing, or if she's in position. And then eventually Juanita says, should we go back to the boat? because it was getting a little windy, it was getting a little darker. The sun was
like,
about
no,
to
not
set.
Yet.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So
why
I said,
so angry.
Yeah, so we stood up, and then I thought, let me just do this now, and I just said, you know, Janita,
did you drop down on the one knee?
Before I dropped down on one knee, I said, you know, I got you something small, just as my earthly symbol of my forever love for you, and got down onto the knee, and yeah, then there was some tears, and it was beautiful, and then oh, wow. Yeah.
And how did she react?
She was, yeah. she was shocked as well as completely like elated. Yeah, so it was special. We went back to the boat and did some cool photos.
Sounds beautiful.
On the boat, yeah, so it was beautiful. Yeah, I'm still floating. Yeah,
nice stuff. So this is this last weekend.
Yeah, so I picked an interest. Well, yeah, it's a big time in my career.
You
with
picked
this
a
whole
wife, and you picked a fight with David Gale. That's great. What a year this is going to be for you.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's really cool. But also at the same time, I'm not kind of, I don't want to let this, someone actually said to me yesterday.
Got a message from your fiance now. She says, why couldn't you have waited until you get the David Guetta money to buy the ring?
No, it's not a bad ring. It's a decent ring. But yeah, someone said to me yesterday, just don't let this whole Guetta thing rule your life for these coming weeks, you know. And
you've got to get on with it.
Exactly. And
the lawyers
and
will handle it.
Exactly. So I'm just continuing my work. And
you got some scary lawyers in this?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, they're great. They're great.
Some
yeah.
scary ones.
They are.
Some real Rottweilers, otherwise it's not going to work.
Yeah, they're good people though, and they know their music side as well. So it's
listen,
cool.
Congratulations, dude, on the engagement. That's very, very exciting.
Thank you so much.
And you've been writing and producing a lot of music for a number of local artists and projects. So what else can we look forward to from you?
So I've basically
busy with at the moment.
Yeah, I've got a ream of different artists that I work with, a lot of upcoming names. Mm-hmm. I recently did a track with an upcoming artist. His name's Daniel Lurie, and then we got Questa on the track as well. So that was really cool to work with Questa and produce that track. I've got an album coming out as well. Well, I'm still kind of finalizing
Daniel
the album.
Barron album?
Daniel Barron album, yeah.
Okay.
So that'll be a little later this year. Yeah, at the same time, just plenty different artists I'm working with, yeah, that's me. I do a lot of writing behind the scenes, a lot of production as well, so it's good fun.
Well, I hope that this this Guetta thing gets you sorted out and you get the credit that you deserve on this one, and let's see what happens. I mean, maybe the guy comes out and turns out to not be such a thieving son of a bitch. Maybe he says to you, you know what, I totally buy what you're saying. There must have been someone who lied to me in my writing team, or
yeah, someone
yeah.
took
whatever.
A chance.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's some money for you, and everybody.
That'll be cool.
Everybody lives happily ever after.
That'll be cool.
That'd be nice. Maybe he says no, it's not true. I came up with this myself, and I'll prove it. And then he's going to prove that. That's going to be very difficult for him to do because your song predates his song.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting. All
it
right.
will be. It
okay.
will be.
Okay. Very exciting. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you. Thanks
nice
for
to
the
see
chat.
You, dude. Yeah. Great always. To see are you? You mostly in Joburg now? Where are you?
Mostly in Joburg. I'm based in Joburg. My studio's here. So yeah, but every now and then I'm to and fro from Cape Town as well. So yeah.
Are you very emotional about your songs, like they're your children?
I am to a point. But I, you know, writing for other artists, I've got to let them go as well. You know, it's still I own the song, but it's. I've got to the point where, you know, I'll write a song and then I'll be like, wow, this is great. Maybe I should use this song. But then
how do you decide which ones to keep and which ones to give away?
What I do is
do you give away the ugly ones? Do you give away the pretty?
No.
I mean, it's like I'm trying to again make the analogy to children. So if you have, let's say you give birth to 10 children in a year and you can only really afford to have 3. So what you do is you give the other 7. And you choose the ugly 7 or the less talented 7 to give to other people. Or is it a question of, this is actually a better song for, let's say, a female voice.
True.
Therefore, I'm going to give it to a really talented local female artist, and she will make it a much bigger hit than I could. Are you
correct.
Are you able to do that?
Absolutely. What I do is really I write with the artist in mind. I find that that is the way to do it. I'll meet the artist. I'll see what they wanna say, what they wanna put out, what kind of sound they want, and then I'll write the song. So okay. I find myself doing that more so. So I'll sit with the artist, maybe do a bit of co-writing, and then now it's more sort of spec writing as opposed to writing something and then submitting it to an artist. It's I like to write on demand more so than the other way around. Yeah,
beautiful. Well, Daniel, thank you very much. Daniel Barron,
thank
I'm gonna
you.
Play Children of the Sun so you can hear it one more time, and if you hear Geta's version you go boo when you hear it until he's paid. All right, very good. Daniel Barron, everybody.
Cheers. Thank you.
It is 8:08. We're coming back with the unnews, and don't forget there's lots of good stuff today on cliffcentral.com. Busy Wednesday. Stick around for more. That's straight up thievery on the part of Geta.
Okay, look, I mean, in Geta's defense, it's a good song. I can see why he stole it.
I don't know if that's a good defense to use.
Well, that's all I got for him.
Okay.
All right. Your Honor, it's a good song. I had to steal it.
Here's an interesting comment from somebody. They must leave Cardi B alone. She was actually emphasizing regret for what she had to do to pay for the good studio time. So I don't know if that's a good excuse.
Unpopular question to whoever sent that message. If Bill Cosby said the same thing, would it be the same?
Yes, you creep. What would you say? Mr. Schmangel's saying Cardi B did what she had to do. At the time, she did with all that stuff. She could drug me, mug me, golden shower me. I don't give two shits, man. She's absolutely deliciously awesome.
All right, that
is even an Arabian shower?
What's an Arabian? Never mind. I don't want to ask. Best believe I will not even Urban Dictionary it.
Well, if you just add another number onto a golden shower.
Is that someone crapping on you?
Well done, sir.
Oh, no.
10 out of 10 for sexual arithmetic.
An Arabian shower.
I don't know if that's a thing. I think I just made it up.
All right, let's just have some fun to wrap it up this morning. Before we get to the unnews, these were 2 years of media coverage on Russiagate condensed into 2 minutes. This should make you smile. How wrong, everyone. You'll recognize a lot of the voices in this clip, in this media clip. Bombshell.
Breaking news.
A bombshell.
Today is a turning point. Today was historically bad for President Trump.
Today was a turning point.
A turning point.
We're at a turning point here.
The beginning of the end for the Trump presidency.
We have another bombshell.
Mike Pence might have to assume the office of the presidency.
Rumblings of the word impeachment.
Breaking news.
Another bombshell out of the White House.
I believe this is the beginning of the end.
I do too.
It's really the beginning of the end.
He may be feeling the walls closing in on him.
All the walls closing in on him.
The walls closing in on him.
Breaking news, a new bombshell.
One astrologer says this means the beginning of the end for President Donald Trump.
Trump will resign.
Trump is going to resign.
Is this the tipping point? I know we've said it over and over.
You think this is a tipping point?
And over and over.
This is a tipping point.
And over and over.
Breaking news, President Trump off the rails.
There's a beginning of the end today.
The beginning of the end.
Breaking news tonight, new bombshell.
This is the beginning, not the end.
The beginning of the end.
The walls are closing in.
The walls closing in.
The walls closing in.
Breaking overnight bombshell.
This is a very dramatic day, and I think it might be near a tipping point. Do you think this is a tipping point?
December 1st, 2017, you can mark it down. This is the day that everything changed.
The beginning of the end?
Beginning of the end.
The beginning of the end.
The beginning of the end.
The beginning of the
end. We begin tonight with the bombshell.
Donald Trump is in a lot of trouble.
Trump is in trouble.
The president will resign.
Another hour, another bombshell.
This is a tipping point.
Trump's going down.
This president could be impeached.
Resignation.
Resignation.
I don't think this president is going to serve out his term.
Mr. Trump will not serve out his term.
He will not
By
serve
way,
out
that
his
is,
term.
No way. That over there is Michael Avenatti, who was just yesterday arrested on charges of trying to extort millions of dollars from Nike. This is the guy who represented Stormy Daniels against Donald Trump. Remember, he was he was meant to be the savior as well once. Filthy, dirty Michael Avenatti, who's being arrested for extortion. This is the kind of person who was actually going to run. He was going to take up the idea of running for president against Donald Trump. And there were Democrats who backed him. Unbelievable. You can listen to more of that. Just choose any media outlet in America, in the mainstream media over the last 2 years, and you'll find more and more of this stuff. Thousands and thousands of hours of TV news time dedicated to absolute horseshit. Fantastic. Let's wrap it up with the unnews for this morning. It's fantastic.
Horseshit.
And let's see if one of them have the balls to apologize to the President of the United States for the lies they've been perpetuating in every corner of their filthy fake news organizations. Let's see if any of them have the gumption to correct bad behavior and to dismantle their fantasies.
Yeah.
Any of them. All right. The IEC are doing the most so voters don't get confused by who to vote for in the elections. They are making the ballot papers a whole lot bigger. They're also looking to include the names of the people involved in the party. The ANC want to go one step further here and also put a small envelope next to their voting square where voters can leave money. When they win, they will steal your money anyway, so this just gives them a new way of doing it. The judge responsible for clearing Jussie Smollett of all wrongdoing has spoken out. Naturally, he's come under fire for his decision, but he did what was best for justice. Going to prison would be too good for him, but being out in public as a confirmed jackass is a much bigger punishment. And finally, World Rugby cannot get any support for their bold new plans for the game. Even England is poo-pooing their plans, so now it is back to the drawing board. They don't know what this means, however, as they blew their entire budget in devising the last plan. Even the French 2023 World Cup bribe money has run out. Good luck, World Rugby. We shall see you tomorrow between 6 and 9. Coming up in the next little bit, your chance to catch up with one of the amazing lawyers at Fluxman's. No one tells a story like Costa Caridis. He really is a guy that you want sitting next to you at a dinner party, to tell you all the stories, to give you his knowledge, his love of all kinds of things, including baking, can you believe it? Yes, he qualified at the University of Wits in 1969, and soon after he was joining Fluxman's, and he's one of the longest serving directors there. Get him going on corporate law, commercial law, estate agency law, joint ventures, mergers and acquisitions, and you'll see why he's been doing what he's been doing for as many years as he has. All of that and more on the way. CliffCentral.com. Be good.
This is CliffCentral.com.